ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 26, Text Number 32. Okay. Fundamental principles of material nature. This verse is the first of a series of verses that's describing the manifestation of the elements of creation and specifically also the relationship between several sets of threes. The subtle object of the sense, or subtle object of sense perception. The medium in which that subtle object of sense perception is carried or conveyed. And the subtle sense organ, specifically sound, subtle sound, the medium of ether that carries sound or conveys sound, and the subtle organ of perception, hearing. Sound, ether, hearing. And then from the element ether, air comes, and so it goes on. So understanding the first one helps a lot in understanding the process. We'll go back. Egoism in the mode of passion is what we read about yesterday. Egoism in the mode of passion. Previously described that egoism in the mode of passion manifests intelligence, material intelligence, and it further produces two kinds of senses and categories, knowledge acquiring and working senses. That's in the mode of passion. And it says that the sense of action depends on the vital energy, and the sense for acquiring knowledge depends on intelligence, and therefore, by inference, the vital energy is also a transformation of egoism in the mode of passion. In the purport, Prabhupada says, not only working, the senses of action require vital energy, but also acquiring knowledge requires energy. So, vital energy comes from this transformation of egoism in contact with the mode of passion. So we have pure consciousness that's not yet come in contact with the muddy condition of material existence, because material existence hasn't unfolded yet. We have pure consciousness. We have the mind in the mode of goodness ruled by Aniruddha. We have intelligence and further devolving five, knowledge acquiring five working senses. Although I'm going to hear coming up something that I haven't sorted out yet. Commonly, those are identified as coming from the modes of egoism in the mode of ignorance, or influenced by the mode of ignorance, or in touch with the mode of ignorance. And let's see what happens as we go further into the chapter. So it seems conflicting, because here, listen to this verse. This is text 32. When egoism and ignorance is agitated, Prabhupada has translated this as by the sex energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Sanskrit is Bhagavad-virya. Bhagavad-virya-chodita. Impelled by Bhagavad-virya. So virya means strength. Bhagavad-virya is the strength of Bhagavan. He's translated it as the sex energy. And of course, that brings up all kinds of connotations. But his sex energy is by his glance. Shambhu. The glance of the Supreme Lord. That's how he impregnates. So it's that energy that's conveyed through the glance of the Supreme Lord further chodita agitates or impels these things to happen. And so there's false ego separates, false ego mixing with the modes of nature, false ego mixing with ignorance, impelled by that energy, Bhagavad-virya, here's what happens. The subtle element sound is manifested, and from that sound comes the ethereal sky and the sense of hearing. So it's boom, 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 domino effect. Each one of these, one can say this causes that, and we find that in the purport. Ego, false ego, in contact with the mode of ignorance causes sound. And sound, subtle sound, causes ethereal sky. And the ethereal sky causes the subtle, not the ear, but the sense of hearing. Shrotram. Sense of hearing. It's certainly fair to say, and right to say, Krishna is the cause. It's also fair and right to say, this is the cause of that effect. And they're not contradictory. Krishna is the cause of all causes. Egoism, in contact with passion, causes sound. And it's important that it's subtle sound, so it's not like sound. But so that's a consequence of a setup that's already created by this process. Sarga and Visarga are different. What the Lord does is Sarga, and what Brahma does is Visarga, and then we go into the sandbox and start playing. We go into the creation and start trying to be little enjoyers. The sandbox isn't there yet. This is just, the creation isn't there yet. This is the devolving of elements from the pradhan, which was exactly what Devahuti asked. How does the unmanifest and manifest relate to the causes of them, the Supreme Lord and His energy. So Bhagavat Virya is His energy, and behind the energy is the energetic Bhagavan. He releases some of His energy, and then Pradhan becomes agitated, Mahatattva, that energy continues, and the elements start separating out. So the first element is not, the subtle devolves into gross, but the first of the gross elements, sky, before sky exists, is sound, the subtle element of sound. It's not really clear what the subtle element of sound is minus sound. Meaning, here's a drum, here's my finger, there's so object strikes object, creates sound, or clap your hands. It Prabhupada describes there's air, and you compress the air, that makes sound. And same as lightning and thunder, there's a, anyway, but cold air, warm air, so the warm air rushes to the cold air and it collides and it makes sound. Thunder. And then lightning. So, it's just elements mixing, but you don't have all the elements yet, so you don't have sound yet. You have the subtle, the word in the Sanskrit is shabda matram, the subtle element sound. The subtle element sound is connected to the sound. It's the basis and support of it. Without the subtle element sound, you don't have. And without ether carrying the sound, doesn't go beyond, you know, the striking, but it carries in ether. So sound then devolves or produces the ethereal sky and the sense of hearing, Shrotram. So, let's read the purport. Well, it goes matram, this shabda matra. If the interaction produced the first of them is shabda matra. We have this teaching in Bhagavad Gita, matra sparshastu kaunteya sitoshna sukha dukha da agama payonya just tongues to tiksha. So this is Sankhya. That's chapter 2, it's Sankhya. Matra sparshas, sense perception. So there's the subtle sense, a subtle sense object, and there's the sense. And when the two interact, there's sense perception. When the senses interact with sense objects, you get sense perception. And that sense perception, to distinguish between one thing and another thing, comes in the form of duality. Matrasparshas, tu kaunteya sitoshna sukha dukha. So there's winter and summer seasons, there's happiness and distress, there's honor and dishonor. It's sense perception. That's what it is. What is it? It's sense perception. Honor and dishonor. It's sense perception. Heat and cold. Sense perception. Happiness and distress. Sense perception. It's not who we are. It's sense perception. It's the senses contacting an object. And combined, there's sense perception. Duality arises from sense perception. introductory instruction of Bhagavad Gita is don't identify with it. Tolerate it. Okay, you feel some heat or cold, you feel some happiness and distress, you feel something from honor and dishonor. You tolerate it because it's not who you are. It's something other than what you are. So identify with what you are, Arjuna. You're feeling pushed and pulled by the circumstance of the battlefield. Let go of that. Detach yourself from that duality and invest your consciousness in reality from the set of duality. There's another nice description of this in the 13th chapter, Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita somewhere, right? Thirteenth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna is asking Krishna about the field of activities and the knower of the field of activities. In texts 6 and 7, we get another Sankhya list, the 24 elements. They're listed somewhat differently than we're used to, but the 24 elements are there. And then we also find, the five great elements: false ego intelligence, the unmanifested, the 10 senses, that's described in the previous verse, working and knowledge acquiring, and the mind, the five sense objects. We're hearing about the first appearance of the first sense object, subtle sound. And then they start to mix. Because the soul is active, they start to mix. And then we get desire and hate, duality, happiness and distress, duality, and you can assume etc., all other forms of duality, the aggregate, that's the big warehouse that has all the elements, life symptoms, chetana, and convictions, dhriti, convictions. All these are considered, in summary, the field of activities and their interactions. The interactions, that's sa-vikaram, they're just interacting. All that stuff, desire, hate, happiness, distress, duality, it's all the 24 elements mixing and transforming when they mix. The same term is used here, not surprisingly, in text 32. Tamasaccha vikorvanat. Vikorvanat means undergoing transformation. So here's some elements, and then they transform. Here we're finding the element, the first element is subtle sound, and that transforms into ethereal sky, and that transforms into the sense of hearing. Now, it doesn't describe the technology of how that happens, it's just describing the sequence of transformation. So, matter transforming into another state of matter, transforming into another state of matter. And this, the sense of hearing connects with the object, the subtle object of sound, and you get duality. You get, in fact, you get mature creation. The whole show starts to manifest. And that's what Prabhupada is explaining in the purport. I'll read the second paragraph of the three paragraphs in the purport. In this verse, it is clear that both kinds of senses, the sense for acquiring knowledge and the senses of action, are products of egoism in the mode of passion. Oops, that's yesterday. Excuse me. Here's today. Here it is said that from sound, ether became manifested, and that air became manifested from ether. It doesn't say that in the verse, but that's coming up. Next verse. Ether devolves and air comes. So from the more subtle comes the more gross element. But it's not just the element devolves. Before you have the element, you have the subtle sense, object, and then the element. In the material world, we manufacture many things for our material comfort simply by hearing. They are already there. But just by hearing, one can transform them. Example. If we want to build a very high skyscraper, this does not mean that we have to create it. The material elements for the skyscraper, metal, earth, etc., are already there. But we make our intimate relationship with those already created material elements by hearing how to utilize them. Modern economic advancement for creation is also a product of hearing. And similarly, one can create a favorable field of spiritual activities by hearing from the right source. Arjuna was a gross materialist in the bodily conception of life and was suffering from the bodily concept very acutely, but simply by hearing, Arjuna became spiritualized, Krishna conscious person. Hearing is very important, and the hearing produced from the sky, and that hearing is produced from the sky. By hearing only can we make proper use of all that which already exists. The principle of hearing to properly utilize perceived materials is applicable to spiritual paraphernalia as well. We must hear from the proper spiritual source. This is a deep science. I don't profess to understand it. There's some parts to it that are interesting, particularly because of the cause and effect relationship. And most important is that Krishna is the original cause, and because sound produces sky, produces the sense of hearing. Which particular point that Prabhupada is making especially is the particular sound that we hear can create our material existence or our spiritual existence. Or even more specifically, spiritual sound can dissolve material existence. That's what's said in the first paragraph. By sound one can also dissolve material existence. That's a powerful mantra. Dissolve material existence mantra. Not matter, but material existence. Not just there's an object and dissolve the object by mantra. Dissolve material existence. So the objects may still be there, but they can be spiritualized by mantra. So it's the consciousness that becomes spiritualized, and thus the object becomes spiritualized by that same sound vibration. And conversely, material sound pollutes the consciousness, and we want different objects for sense gratification, and that's the whole the material creation unfolds for that purpose. So the right sound spiritualizes consciousness, and you enter Vaikuntha. First paragraph. It appears from this verse that all the objects of our sense gratification are the products of egoism and ignorance. It is understood from this verse that by agitation of the element of egoism and ignorance, the first thing produced was sound, which is the subtle form of ether. It is stated also in Vedanta Sutra that sound is the origin of all objects of material possession, and that by sound one can dissolve this material existence. Anavriti Shabdat means liberation by sound. The entire material manifestation began from sound, and sound can also end material entanglement. If it has a particular potency, the particular sound capable of doing this is the transcendental vibration, Hare Krishna. Our entanglement in material affairs has begun from material sound, just repeating the principle. There's something before sound. There's mind. And mind is awarded. It says the mind can free one or entangle one. Sound can free one or entangle one. Before there's mind, there's the soul in contact with the modes of nature, the gunas. And then these things, the sound and mind. And so it's the living entities, the primordial things, the living entities misuse of free will. And Krishna is sanctioning that by these displays of his energies. But you can take one of these and say, just this causes that. And that's also true. So, sound is the beginning of the creation of material object for our sense gratification. Similarly, if sound is purified, our spiritual necessities are also produced from sound. Material sound, spiritual sound. Our entanglement in material affairs has begun from material sound. Now we must purify that sound in spiritual understanding. There is sound in the spiritual world also. If we approach that sound, then our spiritual life begins, and the other requirements for spiritual advancement can be supplied. We have to understand very clearly, again, sound is the beginning of the creation of material objects for our sense gratification. So, before the objects, we heard previous verse, there's desire. Desire arises from the mind. Because of that desire, there's objects. And then there's the element that conveys those objects in the sense of perceiving the objects. It's a whole complex machine to entangle the living entity in the complexities of material existence. The middle paragraph I'll read. Here it is said that from sound the ether became manifested, and that the air becomes manifested from ether. How the ethereal sky comes from sound, and how the air comes from the sky, and how fire comes from air will be explained later on. doesn't exactly explain how, it just says it happens. Sound is the cause of the sky, and the sky is the cause of Shrotram, the ear. The ear is the first sense for receiving knowledge. One must give oral reception to any knowledge one wants to receive, either material or spiritual. Therefore, Shrotram is very important. The Vedic knowledge is called Shruti. Knowledge has to be received by hearing. By hearing only can we have access to material or spiritual enjoyment. So, Shrotram is translated as the ear, and more specifically, it's the subtle sense of hearing. That's what it says. Shrotram, the sense of hearing. So there's the ear, like the instrument, and then there's the sense of hearing. So if the instrument is broken, you can repair the instrument, take another machine part, put another machine part if you know how to replace the machine part. Provided the sense of hearing is still intact. But you need both. You need the sense of hearing and then the instrument. Like the power of locomotion. That's the working senses. So there's legs. But supposing you lose your legs, you still have the power of locomotion. So you can make something else, so you can go from point A to point B because there's the power of locomotion. It's a subtle. This is the gross. And then it's not just the gross that contacts an object, it's the subtle contacts the subtle object. The sense of hearing contacts the subtle element, sound. And then it becomes diversified by Brahma's. He takes the elements and mixes them intelligently so that we can fulfill our desires in this way, fulfill our desires and at least try to, according to different embodiments. Very complex. How intelligent must Brahma be? Or to speak of the Supreme Lord. There's something else I want to touch on, and that's from we're reading from chapter 26 of Canto 3. It's Kapila Dev speaking to Devahuti. I want to read one verse from chapter 10, which is Maitreya speaking to Vidura. And in that discussion, the title of the chapter 10 is Divisions of Creation, which is somewhat like the beginning of this chapter 26, the tattvas that make up the absolute truth, specific to creation. So Maitreya is discussing time. Here's text 11. Eternal time is the primeval source of the interaction of the three modes of nature. It is unchangeable and limitless, and it works as the instrument of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for his pastimes in material creation. The highlight goes to the next verse, which is, this cosmic manifestation is separated from the Supreme Lord as material energy, because so people ask how you can have separated, because everything comes from the Lord. It is separated from the Supreme Lord as material energy by means of Kala, which is the unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Lord. It is situated as the objective manifestation of the Lord under the influence of the same material energy of Vishnu. So the verse is saying that, explicitly, Brahman, in this case, the Supreme, is the same as the cosmic manifestation. That's the abheda, they're not different. But it appears to be beta because of time. Time's the knife that separates, cuts. Appears to, at least. So you don't have events without time, you don't have illusion without time, you don't have cosmos without time, you don't have any of this happening without time. So it appears to be separated, but if you that's in this realm of past, present, and future, temporal time, but then there's eternal time, and that's the spiritual world. So to move from the material world to the spiritual world has a lot to do with how you use time, or how you perceive time, or how you perceive Krishna is going to tell how time is going to act upon you, and whether objects seem separated from him or connected to him. You know, the dream of universal brotherhood and friendship and peace isn't going to happen without the connection of the Supreme Lord and the proper use of consciousness and proper use of time, proper direction. It's a platitude of utopia that's never going to happen, as much as people may strive for it. Sincerely. So this is an unfolding of elements that also requires time. It's an event. And without time, you don't have events. So that this Bhagavad Virya that's mentioned in text 32, the sex energy of the Supreme Personality Godhead, it's his glance, but it's also time. The verse in the 10th chapter is where time is the unmanifested impersonal feature of the Lord. It's a feature of the Kala Shakti, time I am. It brings things into being and it destroys things. Which may seem whimsical. Here comes the Lord, and he's going to create something and then he's going to destroy something. But it's his illusory energy, and it appears to be something that it's not by the influence of his illusory potency. And it's because of the living entity's desire. We're the culprit. He's creating that situation so that we can A, try to fulfill our desire, and B, correct ourselves. At least the opportunity is being provided for that. Built within the creation itself. So, one last pass at all of this. This verse is the first of a series where the unfolding of the elements is being described. One into the next, into the next, into the next. And it's showing a cause and effect relationship, which is exactly what Devahuti was asking about the Lord and his energies bringing the unmanifest to the manifest state. And then they mix. So the teaching of Vyasadeva is called Shakti Parinamavad, which is a fancy term. It means the Vada, the doctrine of transformation of energies. Shankaracharya just dismisses the Lord as impotent, he has no energies. Because if you have energies, then you have to have energetic, and that means two, so you can't have two because there's only one, so he just dismisses energies. But Vyasadeva says that there's energies, and the energies transform, Shakti Parinamavad, which is the same as I mentioned from 13th chapter Bhagavad Gita, Satvikaram, or in this verse, text 32, the term is Vikurvanat transformation, transformation, transformation. It's just energies of the Lord transforming into different states, and so we can say this causes that, but it's energies of the Supreme Lord that are transforming from the unmanifest to the manifest, and then mixing. And the mixing, we get dualities. Happy, sad, America, Poland. You know, dualities. Just the material elements mixing, and the living entities going along for the ride. Saying, oh, I like this, I don't like that. Oh, no, I changed my mind. I don't like that, I like this. This will make me happy. No, that will make me happy. You don't find happiness without the connection with the personality of Godhead. So this is helping us understand. It's a very detailed description, technical description, and it's all it isn't unpacked. It's just describing cause and event sequences. I'm sure somewhere it drills down even further and says how this causes that and how that causes the next thing. This is just describing in an overview of the cause-effect relationship. Okay, text 32, chapter 26. Any discussion?
So Guru Maharaj, you talked about desire. So you said once the material mind is produced, there's
thinking, feeling, and willing. Desire.
But we also understand that what brings the soul in the first place, or why Krishna creates the material world in the first place, because of misuse of free will. So is desire and free will the same, or
not?
Is it?
They certainly they have aspects that are the same, but the term is used in different ways. There are two terms for specific uses. Free will capacity energizes desire, but you know the use of this term desire is more specific to varieties of material desire. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling warm, I'm feeling cold. I desire something to alleviate the warm or the cold. Mm. And the free will is something more primordial. That's how it's used. At least in the Vedic context. Now, in common speech, we could say all kinds of things. But in this more technical application of it has that distinction. Mm. Once I make my free will choice of with Krishna, separate from Krishna, I'm making some other free will choices. I can choose to do all kinds of things. And that's it. It's the operative exercise of free will.
Mm-hmm. So you said the perception is based on duality?
It's separation. Sense perception generates the feeling or the sense of duality. We bring immaterial consciousness, because you bring senses to sense objects, and you're not Krishna conscious, then you get duality. Not based on duality, it generates the sense of duality.
And
I like, I don't like.
Desire
is
manifests
in the mind.
First, the object of desire has to exist before the desire.
No, there's the capacity for desire exists.
Uh-huh.
The specific desire depends upon the object.
Uh-huh. Okay.
The capacity desire rests within the mind. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. A comment, a clarification question, and a question.
Okay.
The comment is that, like, I was fascinated by your description of, like, how the sense of hearing, the gross sense of hearing, is different from the capacity to hear, which is essentially the subtle sense of hearing, or the power to hear.
Yeah.
And, like, if the instrument of hearing is not functional, still the power is there, so the instrument can be replaced.
That's modern medicine.
So it's more, like...
Give you a new set of legs, give you another ear, give you another eye, give you another machine part. Yes. Pull out the alternator, put another alternator. Mm-hmm. That's medicine. But where the subtle sense, the capacity, you know, some machine breaks, the soul goes on to another machine.
And the clarification question is related to the distinction that you also made between the subtle sense object and subtle sense element, or subtle element. Because when we hear the word sound, that can mean subtle sense element sound, or...
Yes, it can mean both.
Or it can mean even subtle sense object sound.
Yes, yes.
So is the subtle sense element the basis for the subtle sense object?
That's what's stated here. The subtle sense the subtle element comes first. Following that, the medium through which that subtle element is conveyed or carried, followed by, you know, that's the cause of the subtle sense that can perceive the subtle element or the subtle object. Not this morning, but I remember another time pondering on this, it would seem that it would be the other way around. And I can't fathom why it's not the other way around, but it's the way that it is. So I'm sure there's some, you know, that's the answer. But I don't know what the answer is. The subtle element precedes this subtle sense of perceiving the element. And then the medium that conveys.
And the question I have is that, the sound is the basic source of, like, or it's the starting point of the devolving of the material elements. So that sound that we are referring to, it's a material sound,
yes,
or a spiritual sound?
No.
It's a material sound.
Yes, spiritual. It's material sound. Material sound. It's the element. Subtle element. To do this properly, this is the Supreme Lord before Brahma has made things. It's just the building blocks. It's the subtle element. And then the subtle capacity to hear. Like Sanjaya's question, you're not hearing anything yet. Just the element is there. Take it off the shelf and put it, give somebody, here you take one of these.
And to go to the realm of transcendence, one needs to support a spiritual sound to transcend that.
And dissolving material existence. And it doesn't mean... Anyway, I said it already. You chant the mantra and the chair disappears. The house disappears, and the planet disappears, and the universe disappears. It means that it becomes spiritualized. A reporter asked Prabhupada what happens when the whole world becomes Krishna conscious, and he said, don't worry, it won't happen. Then he said, if it did happen, this place would be Vaikuntha. So this doesn't look like Vaikuntha. It doesn't seem to be like the descriptions that we find in the... when the four Kumaras come to the gates of Vaikuntha, what that is. But it's... In the sense of what Maitreya is saying in chapter 10, it's the Supreme Lord this place is not different from the Supreme Lord. In that sense, Vaikuntha. We can treat it consciousness-wise as Vaikuntha. It's the Lord's abode. It's His energy. And that, that time is, eternal time is present. Not the other kind, where I want to enjoy, so I prepare myself, and then I go try to get something, and then I get something, and it isn't what I thought it was going to be, and so on.
Whenever I hear this phrase, cause and effect, that this whole creation is cause and effect, so why, like I understand Krishna consciousness transcendental to this creation, but then as we are practicing here, why are we not, or what? Like, because there is so much attention that goes into the effect process.
Because there's so much what?
Attention that goes to the
attention?
Effect, that goes to the effect of, you know, practicing versus, you know, focusing on the cause or where that is coming from. So why that is discouraged, like when that is it?
Why is what discouraged? Focusing on the process or focusing on the cause? It's not, we're instructed to do both by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. The process, perform your prescribed duty, and at the same time, always think of me. Now, how do you do that? It's possible by attachment to Krishna. So you must think of Krishna, but to think of Krishna, then the medium is the process or devotional service. We don't think of Krishna separate from the process of devotional service. We don't think of the process of, we don't engage ourselves in the process of devotional service separate from the thought of Krishna. So we're doing both. And properly and very, very pleasantly, devotional service is not different than Krishna when properly performed. It's not different than Krishna. It is the medium for realizing the transcendental nature of devotional service and the transcendental object of that devotional service, Krishna. They're done at the same time. The realization is simultaneous as well. We can see things as they are, as the light is present. We don't see things as they are otherwise. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur uses these conventional pots and plates kind of language. When there's darkness, you can't see pots and plates, although they're there in the room, right before you, you can't see them. When the light comes, then you can see the pots and you can see things as they are. Just making it pots and plates. And then, how are they to be used? They're to be used in Krishna's service. That's in the enlightened state. In the dark state, it's, I don't see what it is. I see it as an object for sense gratification. So matra sparshas, attraction, repulsion. I like this one, I don't like that one. You're my friend, you're my enemy. I'm feeling happy, I'm feeling unhappy. In the transcendental realm, there's no unhappiness. There's feelings. There's all kinds of diversity of feelings, feelings of separation from Krishna, but that's an ecstasy. It's not an unhappiness. Mm-hmm. And interactions with others. It's impetuses for love for Krishna, loving Krishna more deeply because there isn't anything else. There's just varieties of loving Krishna. And this is a perverted reflection of that. And that, this nice verse, time energy creates the sense of separateness. So therefore we call it separated energy. So we see matter, and this is the devolving of matter. Because the time energy is acting. The time energy is acting because misuse of free will. break it down.
The question is okay. So here we are in the material world where everything is temporal. Okay. So separation from Krishna is temporal. So would it mean that in the spiritual world where everything is eternal, the separation from Krishna is eternal in the spiritual world?
No. There's a, by influence of yoga maya, there may be feelings of meeting and feelings of separation. By yoga maya, there's feelings of, like that. But there's no separation.
But the feeling.
There's a feeling.
Feeling of separation. Okay. And, in this state of my consciousness right now, I seem to be able to make decisions that I do or I don't something, that I decide to do something or not, but in the dream, everything seems that it is kind of pre-designed, that I enter the dream and things happen on their own without me being able to control anything. So, is the ability, my ability to do something or to decide at this state also illusion?
The last phrase I lost because I don't agree with the premise. When you're, the state of dreaming is where consciousness is very dull, but it's not zero. In the state of awake, consciousness is not full, but it's not zero. So the operative sense of how I'm controlling my destiny, which is illusion, is more operative in our waking state, but it's not absent in the dreaming state, because it's intrinsic to the soul. I don't know if you've had the experience, but I've had the experience of the half-awake, half-dreaming state, and you design the dream like you're awake, because you're almost awake, but half-awake, half-dreaming, half-asleep. And so then you go down and you're less conscious and more dull. And therefore, when people are sleeping, ghostly inhabitation is more likely. Or when someone is intoxicated, ghostly inhabitation is more likely because their consciousness is more dull. And so it's more dull doesn't mean zero. It's not that we have no free will. It's just more covered. And so the material energy is acting and our free will is less operative, but not non-operative.
It happens once in a while.
And then you go the other. When our free will is maximally operative, that is choosing Krishna, we have the greatest freedom. It sounds contradictory that we're choosing to be the servant, like we give up our free will, but it's a free will choice to do so, and then we have the greatest freedom of choosing all kinds of things. But it's only in relation to Krishna. And the empowerment is greater as the result of Krishna's strength. The living entity, the spark that's closer to the fire, has more glowing potency. Although the potential is there when it's separate from the fire. It's just not manifest. Go ahead.
A couple of times happened to me that in the dream, I ended up in a difficult situation, like, you know, sometimes you cannot find a way out or from somewhere. And I started chanting. And then I woke up and I was like, whoa, I was able to chant in my dream in a difficult situation.
Fantastic.
It's a couple of times.
Yeah.
It's such when you wake up, It's such fantastic feeling that I was able to remember to chant.
It's a free will choice, and it comes from proper exercise of when you're awake. Okay, I think we're done. You have something more?
One more question.
One more.
So the question on sound, so material sound and spiritual sound, you're talking about that. So I was wondering, like, when the sound or the speech cause, say, some misunderstanding or hurt. So from subtle, so the speech, that we speak, if it is coming from, you know, subtle to gross, especially in the case of, so if you're hearing from your devotee, it's 100% assured it's from subtle to gross. But then, why is that then the cause of concern or doubts come? Is it because it's the receiving part is happening from gross to subtle?
I can't follow. My thoughts are going in a different direction. It's simpler for me, it's simpler just to say I don't place value in it. It's Maya. It's what it's not. So the details of how it's not, it's not so important. What's important is it's not. So I don't place value in it. Now maybe it helps to go in there and see more closely, scrutiny, why it's not, and how it's flowing in the wrong way. Maybe it's helpful. But at least, from the less subtle inspection, it doesn't stand on its own. It has no merit. It has no life. It has no meaning. It's illusion. So why invest time and energy to unpack the illusion? That's. I guess I could try to go there and say, when there's some feeling of hurt that's coming from or is in relation to an object or an entity that we know in fact that there's no hurt. It's a continuation. One way to consider it is it's an extension of the primordial rejection of Krishna. And this is just a subset of the rejection of Krishna, that I'm feeling something towards representative of Krishna because of my feeling towards Krishna. There's this. I have a relationship problem with Krishna. Otherwise, I wouldn't be in this mature world. And someone that's representing Krishna, I have a problem because of that, the prior problem. So let me address the prior problem, and then I can sort through this other one. Or at least understand it. That's where it's coming from.
So
does that help?
Yes, Guru Maharaj. But I hear from you, Mazata Vidhidimo, that is temporary, I should ignore and focus on eternal.
But?
So when do we... at the same time, I feel like when we open up and express that concern, you know, hear from the pure devotee. So, how to see these two? I can just ignore, you know, mentally say, okay, this is not real, the feelings that I have, let me just ignore and move on. But
just following what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I park it. This, I don't try to resolve duality. I tolerate it. I just put it over there. And then I place consciousness in Sat. And as I place consciousness in Sat, that will become more clear. It was, you know, the energy that is acting upon me will subside. It just fades. The more I give energy to it, it consumes me. It becomes my life and reality and my existence, and I need oxygen. I need to breathe. I can't breathe. So don't, you know, withdraw consciousness from there and place consciousness in reality, in Sat. And then that will be understood. In that spiritually, so what to do if it's a big impediment? The big impediment is because I made a monster by investing consciousness in illusion. And now I'm fighting this lion. It's like a dream. There's no reality there. Wake up! Wake up! I think, you know, there's no tiger. It's not there. Oh, there's no tiger. You're right, there's no tiger. Boy, I was feeling so afraid of this tiger, and there's no tiger. It's just a bad dream.
But there's also a place. Is there a place where we can express that concern?
Sure. But you're likely to get the same response. It's just it's not real.
Mm.
But it feels real, and I look at me. I'm trembling.
Mm.
The tiger's after me.
Mm.
Okay. I feel sorry that you feel the tiger's after you, but there's no tiger after you. Come to another state of consciousness. Become awake. Open your eyes and look around and see in not a fearful, the tiger's after me consciousness, but an unawake consciousness. Take 10 deep breaths. Okay, I feel better now. It's not necessarily, it's not just this particular, take it more broadly, and supposing somebody's having a big problem. Compassion is not necessarily that you just jump in the middle of their big problem and look at their big problem with them and see how they can address this big problem. You know, then they'll perhaps feel supported. Oh, this person cares about my big problem. Now they care about me because they care about my big problem. But sometimes it's differently done when you have somebody that's carrying on with something that's just was dealing with one of these yesterday with somebody that was, so someone else did it instead, and they spoke with the person and they calmed down, and the problem wasn't as big as they thought it was. There's something they need to do, but knowledge brings detachment. It helps. And attachment to Krishna is the highest knowledge. Devotion to Krishna brings the realization of Krishna, the highest knowledge. And that's where attention should go. So to help someone do that may bring the solution to the problem that wasn't even a problem. Or paper tiger. A child looks up in the sky and sees a cloud and says, "Mommy, there's a pussycat." "It's a tiger." "Oh, Mommy, it's a tiger, it's a tiger." "It's not a tiger, it's a cloud in the sky. It's something." Yes.
One question.
Yeah.
I was thinking, like, what does make hearing effective?
Were you hearing the class out there?
While driving.
Uh-huh.
Little bit too.
Okay.
Is it the, like, amount of faith we have? There's so many people who come to the temple to hear, but there are few who take it and few who don't. So is it the faith that makes the hearing effective, or in my person?
Sure. You can say the entry point of saying the cause, you could say a number of things, and that's one of the things that you could say. It's not the only thing that you could say. You could say eagerness. Supposing I'm not so advanced in faith, but I have eagerness, I'm suffering. I want some relief from my suffering. And then what can receive? And then when the situation, the suffering is alleviated, off we go. But faith is certainly something that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes as a measure of how well we can receive good association, good instruction, Krishna, faith. Right?
So like in my situation, like sometimes I may hear with a lot of faith, or in there are other times when I may not be very attentive. So does the sound of a vibration would affect on me?
Sure.
Depends on where.
You can say faith. You can say submission. There's a number of ways of describing those variables. The answer is yes. I'm also just purposefully leaving the door open. So you don't get locked into one thing, and there's actually varieties of ways of looking at the circumstance. Okay. And there, thank you very much. Prabhupada, you're done.
One question,